Tamiko Faison, your host for Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast dedicated to showcasing and supporting therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color around the world. We are here to inspire, and don't we need some inspiration today with all that we have going on in the world? During my last interview, I was talking with Dr. Brittany Connors about COVID-19, and now the country, the world is outraged about the recent murder of Mr. Floyd by a policeman. So there are riots, there are protests. At the time of this interview, our guest said that she could hear people protesting from her window. So I am very grateful that during this time, a therapist of color is taking time out of her schedule because I know she is busy. She is a therapist working in a specialized area of practice. She is a mom, she's an advocate. I mentioned that she, I just want to say that I was emailing her and it took me a while to respond to one of the emails. And I apologized and said, I'm really busy because, you know, I have black sons. And she responded and said, oh, no, I get it, because she has a son and she has actually two. But I knew she had one because he can dance. And I see him on IG all the time. And I just laugh and smile when I see him dancing. Our guest is Alondra Amon, and she is a first generation Salvadorian Haitian American from Prince George's County in Maryland. She graduated top of her class from Samuel Merritt University. Woo-hoo! She was accepted into the Emerging Leaders Development Program through the American Occupational Therapy Association and is passionate about advocating for diversity and inclusion. And I'm so excited she is here. You don't even want to know about all the technical issues we've had before we got to this point. We have so much in common as well. So we're going to keep it moving. Please be patient with us during this interview because there is a lot going on. Alondra, I met you, or I actually saw you, but wanted to meet you at the AOTA conference last year, and you were on the big screen, and you said, repeat after me, diversity died, and I said it, and we were just laughing before the interview because my son says I don't say it right. He doesn't want to speak Spanish with me, even though I know I can say some things right in Spanish, but you said I did okay, so I appreciate that. But yeah, in my mind, when I saw you, I said, I want to meet her. And I am just happy that we are able to meet virtually right now. So welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I'm so happy too. It's such a pleasure and honor to be here with you, and I'm excited. Yes.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about yourself in your own words and how you first became interested in occupational therapy.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I'm half Salvadorian, half Haitian. I grew up just with my mom, so I grew up in the Salvadorian culture, and I'm the only one in my family who physically looks black, but I also, and my siblings look, you know, Latinos. And growing up experiencing discrimination and health disparities and inequalities and in the way we were treated, just kind of always fueled my passion for fighting against injustice, inequality, and promoting equality. And how do we get to that point? And so I think the medical field kind of supports me in what I'm trying to do, and especially as an occupational therapist. Initially, I wanted to be a PT. You know, I did my undergrad in kines for physical therapy. I was like, that's what I want to do. That's what I wanted to do since high school. But something was missing. I felt like there was just this human connection and holistic approach that I was missing from physical therapy. And so I actually had a family member who ended up in the ICU during her medical procedure. She experienced complications during the procedure, and it led for her to be in the ICU unit. And so when I went to go visit, you know, she has all these tubes. She's now going to have to be on dialysis. And I mean, just watching her unconscious, and she had been in ICU for weeks. Wow. You know, I'm just thinking, like, how is she going to recover? How is she can't go home? She will need care. And who are the people that support that? Who are the therapists that support that? You know, she won't be able to do a lot of her just day-to-day things until she gets better. But she's probably not going to be able to drive. She's probably not going to be able to, you know, get around as independently as she used to be. And so that's when I started researching and I found OT and I'm like, where has this been all of my life? How come nobody told me about OT when I was 18, you know, like, or younger, you know, I never heard of OT until that point. And by then I was in my 30s. So I'm so blessed to be in this profession. But, you know, it was interesting when I was in my program, there weren't that many people that looked like me. And when we read about the history of OT, there weren't that many people that were mentioned that looked like me, or people of color in general. And I felt like that needed to be addressed. Because I'm like, you can't tell me that there's no people of color in OT doing great things. Like, where are they?
right.
Yeah.
So tell me about your current role. I know you are a leader. I know you also practice in a specialized area of practice. So let's talk about what you do as an OT.
Yeah, so very non-traditional as a non-traditional OT setting for sure. I work with horses. So I incorporate hippotherapy, it's called, which is equine assisted therapy, basically. And, you know, my patients are on the horse and I'm working with a group of people to help manipulate the movement of the horse, support the patient and making sure that the patient is doing what I'm asking of them. But it's all very, you know, occupation based with what we're trying to work towards as far as the goals go. So it's pretty unique, very, very non-traditional.
Wow, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I love it. I love animals. So I was just like, horse, of course, like, no problem. mind you, I had no experience working with horses at all.
Wow.
So everything I've learned about horses, I've learned on the job. And there's always so much to learn. But man, compared to when I first started, I know so much. But yeah, there's still a lot to learn. But it's just amazing. You know, the kids think they're getting a pony ride or a horse ride. And I'm over here like, yeah, that's right. Work that core.
And are you the only OT? Are there other OTs or is this a full OT?
Yeah. So I'm actually the only full-time OT and the only therapist of color at my, in our organization. We do have another person of color, who's a volunteer coordinator. So it's just two of us. Yeah. But I'm the only therapist of color that's full-time. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And your other role. So that's your regular work role, but you are a leader. I think an everyday leader. tell me about your leadership role.
It's always interesting to hear that. Cause I'm like, oh, am I a leader? I don't know if I'm a leader. Oh,
yes, you are. You're definitely a leader.
Yeah. So, you know, when I got into OT school, well, before I got into OT school, I was never interested in joining any extracurricular activities. You know, I was a mom. My goal was to get in and out, you know, so I would go to school, go home. But when I got into the OT program, I was like, okay, this is my career and I want to immerse myself in this field, in this profession, and really take advantage of, this time while I'm in school. And so that's actually when I first started kind of taking on a leadership role. You know, I joined the President Ambassadors Program, which did a lot of work in the community, especially targeting socioeconomically disadvantaged communities and going to high schools and talking to the youth there. But then I also joined, I became one of a co-president for the Student Occupational Therapy Association. And when I was during our first year, everyone's like, oh my gosh, nobody has time to be part of that. Like, you know, we'll participate, but we'll just be on the sidelines. And then our second year, it was time for people to step up because the year above us was leaving. And I was like, you know what? There's so many things that I could see we could do differently. Like, I'm going to go ahead and take this role. I didn't know what it entailed. I just knew what I envisioned for the Student Occupational Therapy Association. And my co-presidents were so supportive with the initiatives that I wanted to put out there, like a Veterans Appreciation Day. There was nothing for veterans on campus celebrating the vets. And I'm like, why is OT not doing this? Our history is in the military. That's our origins. And then I did established community outreach connections, where we helped distribute, you know, medical supplies and equipment to the local community, which was in Oakland. And, you know, the people don't have health insurance, or health insurance won't cover it, or they now became caregiver to someone because they fell ill, got shot, and they had nowhere to get their medical supplies. And so I created that partnership with them. And it was really important for me to give back too. So we raised funds and donated to them. We donated to the Political Action Committee. We donated to a local mental health community that supported people in recovery. And I think that just kind of lit a fire as far as leadership goes. Mm-hmm. And then while I was starting field work, a teacher sent me an email and was like, hey, you should apply to this. And I was like, what is this? And it was AOTA's Emerging Leaders. It was for AOTA's Emerging Leaders Development Program. And I kind of was like, what? Nah, no. Like, no. Like, really? Apply to this? Like, I don't think so. This is a nationwide search. You have to apply. And they only accept like 14 people. I have no chance. But I applied anyways, because if she saw something in me, then, you know, let's just go for it. The worst that could happen would be no, and I'm at the same place. But then surprisingly, they said yes, and I wasn't at the same place. So now I was, you know, going through that program and having a mentor that was on the board, and it just really opened my eyes to the ability to network and kind of the behind the scenes of what goes on in AOTA. And again, I didn't, in that cohort, I was the only person of color. Mm. And I just said, we need to talk about this. We need to talk about this. And out of that came my YouTube channel and, you know, the work I do on my social media platform, because I'm still not seeing people of color represented and highlighted in our profession. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, because I get emails and people DM me and they're like, you know, oh my gosh, until you, I didn't even know I've never even met another Black OT. And I'm just like, why? That's so sad.
It is.
Yeah. So I just really I've kind of taken on that role of just really highlighting people in our profession that are doing amazing things.
Yes,
and why are they not getting the shine? And providing that platform for them and hoping that this encourages people who probably even never heard of OT to see themselves reflected in OT. That's really important. That's really important to me. So
it's good that you mentioned that they're like, we are here, you know,
yeah.
We've been here, but not necessarily highlighted. That's the reason podcast. It's the same reason that you just mentioned for your YouTube channel, is to showcase, to show that we are here. And I do hear people saying the same things. I hear therapists of color saying the same thing. Like, no, there are no other therapy entrepreneurs of color. That's why I, you know, wanted to connect with you. I'm going, oh, there are.
And yeah, oh yeah.
In your state, and you just don't know them. We have not connected.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate that you are showcasing on your platforms as well. So you mentioned, you know, you're the only one, in the class, and then, you know, you're the only one in this Emerging Leaders program. Now, I am not certain of the actual percentage of people of color. I think I've said 4%, and I think that's actually African-American. I don't know what the number is right now, but it's still low, and it does not reflect what the percentage of people of color are in our country. and how it's becoming more diverse, but yet the profession is not matching. You know, that's the ACOAT standard. I was looking at ACOAT standards, and it actually said in your program, you know, the class, the student should reflect the demographics of where the program is. And how often do we see that, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know it was an ACOAT standard.
I saw it in the ACOAT standard. I said, huh, look at this here. So how is that
interesting?
How people are addressing that. Okay, we have this issue. And then also on top of that, I'm kind of blending two different things as I'm talking about the low percentage of minorities or people of color in our profession, but also socioeconomic status, because I think that's less common as well. And I know you said that you come from a single parent home, I as well. And you talk about imposter syndrome and some of the communications that we had. How has that impacted you, you know, both being a person of color and then also having this double, you know, I would say disadvantage in coming from a lower SES background and the whole imposter syndrome? I definitely deal with it. And, you know, people sometimes they look and they see the glamour and the, oh, you're doing this, you're doing that. I'm like, you have no idea. You know, yeah. I'm also from a single parent household. Even though I'm 43, I still deal with some of the things that, you know, from when I was 7 years old, you know.
Yeah, the struggle is real, people. The struggle is real. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, because of culturally, you know, when your parents immigrate from another country, they're usually coming and they want the best for their children. They expect their children to go to college and, you know, get an education. And so that's, you know, pressure on us kids, us first generation kids. But then also, you know, when you enter academia, you have that pressure. And now you're in a class with, for some people, they're in a class with other people that don't look like them, and they have to represent and work twice as hard, you know, three times, four times as hard, just to feel like they're on the same level. And so that nobody finds out that they, you know, that they perceive them as like inadequate or shouldn't be in the program or anything like that. And so for me, it was a huge challenge, because I didn't even know what imposter syndrome was until I was in grad school. And I went to a conference called the National Conference on Race and Ethnicity, I believe, NCOR. And it was at that conference that I finally got a name for what I was experiencing. And this whole time I thought it was just me. Mm-hmm. So I was suffering in silence, you know, working hard, just trying to keep up with everything and feeling like I'm not doing enough and feeling like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't be in this program. And here it is, someone's putting a name to it and telling me what I'm experiencing is imposter syndrome. And so, I mean, for me before that, I mean, I had really high anxiety. I would feel depressed. I mean, panic attacks, test times. I was like, oh my gosh, like test taking, I was just not the best. And it was a struggle. And I think once I was able to label what I was experiencing, that's only then was I able to kind of process, okay, this is not me, this is my imposter syndrome. And taking a step back, because one thing I learned is that a lot of people that experience imposter syndrome, they're very high achieving. We're super smart, we work hard, we do a good job, you know, but we don't necessarily take the time to look back at all of our accomplishments, because we're just so busy in the moment, just trying to meet the next mark, right. You know, and so, whenever I felt that imposter syndrome kind of creeping in, I would look back and I'm like, but look at my grades. Like, I'm actually doing all right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It didn't make it go away, but it just made it easier to kind of digest what I was doing and how I was doing. But yeah, it's a struggle. It's a struggle. But I think educating yourself and reading up on it really helps to kind of create a starting point. And really just, I like to give it a name. So it's, I have it, I call it my little IP monster, my little imposter syndrome phenomenon monster that's talking. Well, that's just the imposter in me talking.
I love that you said give it a name. I think that's similar. Again, I'm referring back to the interview that I had with Dr. Brittany Connors when we were talking about fear. And we name it, and then we just do it afraid. We just move forward. And so we name, also we have imposter syndrome. It's not real. Imposter syndrome is real, but those thoughts about you being inadequate or not supposed, you know, you're not supposed to be there, or you're not achieving what you're supposed, those are false. And so, like you said, you can step back and process and reflect if you take the time to do that, because sometimes, like you said, we're trying to, you know, here's the next accomplishment. That's interesting that, you got to a place where you're now able to actually name it and move past it. And so that answers really the next question where I was going to ask you, how did you overcome those challenges? So it sounds like you educated yourself.
Yeah.
You didn't just educate, you educated and implemented, and you did not let that stop you from moving forward.
Yeah. And I really think it also helps to have a support system that you can reach out to and talk to, whether it's friends or other people in the program that are experiencing it as well. And just, you know, to be able to talk it out and just be like, you know, this is not something that people experience alone. Like, it's not just you. I guarantee you there's someone else in your class. Even if they're not a person of color, they may come from a socioeconomically disadvantaged background, or, you know, they may have those same symptoms of imposter syndrome. And so, you know, having that connection and resource to be able to vent to and talk it out is really important as well. And so I always encourage people, if they need to just reach out, you know, and it's harder, I feel, you know, for students of color, and there's been research on, you know, how people of color, experience this more so than, you know, non-people of color. And there's been all types of research on this, but, when you're the only one or one of the few people of color in your program and you do get discriminated against. I mean, I hear professors, you know, discriminating against their students, which should not happen. But that just feeds into our imposter syndrome even more. And so we really need to educate the educators as well to understand and be an ally and supportive when people are experiencing this. Because, man, if you don't even have a mentor or an advisor that you can go and speak to about it without them saying, oh, it's just in your head. Like, no, I don't want to hear that. I know it's in my head.
Right.
Like, encourage your students, tell them you belong here. This is where you need to be. Tell me how I can help you. You know, how can I support you so that, you know, you feel confident in what it is that you're doing versus dismissing and disregarding or degrading your students. I mean, I've heard of teachers giving Black students or Latino students lower grades than their peers for doing more work. Like, are you kidding me? Like, is the content there? Why are you giving them lower grades? Or even just giving them lower grades in general. And that's, it just blows my mind. That's ridiculous to me. So I think there's other factors that feed into people's imposter syndrome as well, which of course will also feed into that anxiety, that depression, and it needs to be addressed. But for sure, educating yourself on it, and understanding that you are not alone. Other people are experiencing this, and having a resource where you can vent. I mean, I just go to my friends and I'm like, you know what this teacher said, you know? And they're like, that's ridiculous, you know, because they get it. So I think that's helped me a lot. I still struggle with it. And I love my job and my organization, but you know, when you're one of the few, you know, you can't help but sometimes, for me, I can't help but sometimes feel like I'm being looked at or judged, or it's nothing on them, it's on me. It's me that's experiencing that. Nobody said anything. Like they sing my praises, but I'm like, I just don't know. Like, do I really fit in here? Is this where I belong? I love these horses. Like
you made a lot of good points. And so the enemy of being solo with those thoughts, that is an enemy. You know, you have to find someone, and like you said, whether it's a person of color or not, that can relate to what you're talking about. Not someone that's going to be dismissive. They may or may not be in your program. And I know for me, it was an African-American male who was not in my program.
Mm-hmm.
And I expressed some things to him. He was a professor. And even with him, I told him, I said, you're not going to understand everything.
I'm saying. Because
I had a picture of him. He was extremely articulate. And he was constantly getting promoted
in
university. So I said, but you're not going to understand this, because, you know, these are some things that I dealt with in my household. You know, the food stamps, I was just giving it to him. I'm like, food stamps, welfare, lights cut off. You know, I was naming all this stuff. And he looked at me and said, I'm from the projects. He's like, who are you talking to?
Yeah.
And so in my mind, again, I was thinking I was by myself. And here's this person who had been through not only, you know, the issues with socioeconomic status, but he had came to the university as one of the first African Americans. And so he was called everything, and it was loud sometimes, you know. So I was going, isn't it something how the mind will try to tell you something that's not true? And if you don't open your mouth and find support, it can
it's so true. Yeah. And I think that, you know, when we see these professors and people of color that are doing these amazing things, like we worked hard to get there, you know, nothing was given to us, because that just is not the case. And there is a huge chance that what you have experienced, they've experienced as well. You know what I mean? Because nothing goes without work and hard work. And I'm sure if you ask any OT of color, leader of color, that they will tell you about their challenges. Mm-hmm. And some of it will include, you know, fighting for their place in their setting, or fighting for their place in general, because people didn't agree or discriminated against or thought less of them. So it is interesting. I mean, I get intimidated by people like that too. I'm like, oh my goodness, they're so smart, they're articulate and everything. Like, that ain't me. It's just not me. I'm sorry. I came from PG County, the ghetto, and we just don't, like, that's not me. Like, same thing. Food stamps, we had, well, you know, we were on welfare all my life, electricity getting cut off.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just think even just sharing that, like, there's comfort and familiarity. And I think the reason why we work so hard is because we're trying not to create a cycle. We're trying to break a cycle, you know? That's where we came from. Now let's level up.
Yeah, you know, and you know, with you saying that comfort and the familiarity, and then but still thinking, oh, I'm intimidated by this person because that's not me. The funny thing is that oftentimes those same people are looking at you and thinking how amazing you are. You know,
people
at a laundry and going, oh my goodness, she's on the big screen, a minority OT, you know, at the OTA conference. She has this YouTube channel. I mean, a great Instagram platform where she's speaking out and advocating. And so people are looking at you saying the same thing that you're saying about other people. And so that same professor that I mentioned, he visited me at my business maybe about 5 years ago. And he sat down and he said, you know, I always admired you. And I'm just, you know, I'm looking, I'm going, what? You always admire
me?
How could you admire me when I'm admiring you?
Me?
Yeah, and it will just bring tears to your eyes to think about, you know, who you are impacting. And so for me, like, he's African-American male. I didn't grow up with my father. And so he was also like the first African-American male that was really, that I had met, I guess, in academia, that really took time to like mentor me. So there was like this whole emotional thing when I really thought about how mm-hmm. I could in turn impact and inspire someone else that inspired me so much. So.
Yeah, it's powerful, man. I swear, teachers and professors, they have a power, and they can make a change and leave such a lasting impression, good or bad, mm-hmm. On their students. And it's just really nice when you have that connection. You know, one of my mentors, she was a former professor, and amazing, you know, and she's not Black. She is, oh my gosh, she's gonna kill me. She's of Asian descent, but she's like second generation.
Okay.
I'm not even gonna say the country because I don't want her to get mad at me. But man, she faced a lot of the same things that I faced, you know, and she grew up in Vallejo. And if anyone from the Bay Area knows the Bay Area, they know Vallejo is, you know, what it's known for. E40 came out Vallejo. Shout out to E40. But I mean, her compassion and understanding is really what helped me through the program. Mm-hmm. And without someone like her, I think I would have struggled a lot. And so, man, it's so important that these people in academia are able to recognize the power that they have and be careful of what they say to their students. And my hope, you know, I'm looking to go into a PhD program and at some point in my career, mm-hmm. I would like to practice a little bit more, but I definitely would love to get into academia and kind of create some change and be the face, you know, because we don't see that many people of color as professors either.
Yeah.
So just be that face and allow for provide a safe space for students and mentor them and really encourage them to get involved, and whether that's community research, whatever, because they can do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you're right. In addition to needing more diversity, student diversity, we need more professor and faculty mm-hmm. mm-hmm. diversity, because when students come in and they're looking at the program, they're looking yep. at who are the professors, you know, mm-hmm. I want to see who is going to be in front of me for the next 2 to 3 years.
That's yeah.
And I don't have no doubt that you're going to do that, you know, excel in a PhD program and help change academia as well.
I hope so. I hope so.
So you've given a lot of advice here. What's next for you? What are your professional goals? And you said the PhD, but yeah. how can we support you in what you're doing right now?
How can people support me? I think just kind of, I like to think more of like the bigger picture and people supporting one another and reaching out to a huge thing, I think, for me that really help kind of change my pace and how I approach things is having a network of having my network, my support system, and people that I could just, you know, send a message to and they'll answer and they'll provide me resources and answers. So I would recommend to people, if they want to support, you know, some of what I'm doing promoting diversity and inclusiveness, is to really just kind of go and search and find. Trust me, you can follow me on Instagram, but follow Tameka on Instagram, and you will find, you know, other people of color and connect with them and share the work that they're doing. And I think that's a huge way that we can start creating more awareness of the people that are in this space. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, yes, I'll be doing the PhD program too. And hopefully, fingers crossed that I get in. I applied to one and I did my interview and everything, but we'll see how that goes. When I'm going through that, I may be reaching out to a few people for sure. Help me! I'm drowning in my PhD.
Yeah, keep us posted on that.
Yeah, I'm hoping to do research geared towards promoting diversity within OT. So I may be reaching out to you guys to, you know, be research participants or something like that. So we'll see how that goes. That would be another amazing way that you guys could support me in my endeavors. But yeah.
And so I think we'd be remiss. I know we're getting to wrap up, but without saying anything about all what's happening, I started off the show talking a little bit about the recent murder of Mr. Floyd. And that impact on our world. And you were saying, you know, you hear the protesters outside of your window, it's bittersweet. And I I have two, I would say maybe three African-American sons, one that I have fostered for a while, who's been with us a lot lately. And there's a lot of conversation about it. And there's a lot of discussion, even, you know, with different professions and what should they be saying and what should they be doing. Do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I have two sons, and they know what's going on. The little one, maybe not so much because he's five, but he picks up on the energy of all that's going on. And I think now's the time for honesty and sincerity and also being positive. You know, it's easy for us to get caught up in the foundation of why all of this continues to happen. But I think that if we're honest with our kids and the people that we speak with about why this is such an important issue, that hopefully we just start creating some understanding, some compassion for humans, human beings, you know, human beings. And I know it's going to take a lot of work because at the core, we really have to make changes at the core, our foundation, the United States of America's foundation. And that's going to take a long time. But, you know, with these protests happening at this macro level, I'm hoping that some of that begins to slowly start trickling down towards our foundation and the changes that need to be made, because it's a lot. It's a lot. And it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to feel all of those emotions. So just being honest with yourself, being honest with the people that you're talking to, being honest with your children, and, you know, also making sure that you're hoping for the better. We're hoping that all good comes out of this, you know, in baby steps. We can't, you know, we know right. Nothing's going to change overnight. We know that, because there's people that, you know, just will not get it or don't care to get it. But just be honest. Just be honest, I think is the main thing. And don't repress those feelings. We have the right to feel that way. It can be draining. Sometimes you got to disconnect yourself from all of that and find your peace. But those emotions are valid. Yeah.
Yes, they are. And, you know, we both talked about before the show how if you ask us, be ready. how are you doing right now? Be ready, because we might there's no telling what we're going to say right now, because there's a lot going on.
Yes.
It's a lot. So yeah. Understanding, I love what you said, being understanding, having compassion, being honest, and then being able to work. So we have the hope. But faith without works is dead. So you can't just have the hope and not do the work. And different people will do different types of work. And, you know, and so, like you said, you know, being patient with people, not pointing the finger, you're not doing this, you're not doing, everybody's maybe doing something different and in different ways. So being patient and understanding that this is about humans.
Yeah, it is. Human beings. Fellow American human beings, you know, your so-called fellow American human being. Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I don't go out and protest, because I just don't like big crowds like that. But I find other ways to advocate, you know, whether it is through my social media platform or writing a letter to AOTA or sending an email to the California Association, and things like that are ways that you can still support and advocate without, you know, physically going out there. There's many ways you can support. And I like what you say. If you ask us how we're doing, we're going to let you know. Okay. So I had someone ask me how I was doing, and I always try to stick with the short answer. So I'm like, I'm doing all right considering the circumstances. And of course the response is like, they'll either leave it alone. Like, yeah, I understand it's hard, and not ask a follow-up question. And then I'm like, phew. Okay. Or if you ask us a follow-up question, be prepared. That's all I'm saying.
Be prepared.
You know, I'm gonna give you my response, my experiences and all of that. And maybe it may be more than what you're asking for. And I'm going to be, you know, I'm not going to insult anybody. I'm not here for that, but you know, I'm gonna let you know. So just right, be prepared.
Right. Like I said yesterday, I don't even know what I said. Somebody asked me and I think back, I'm like, I don't know what I said. It's been a lot. But the other thing that you said that stuck out is, you know, do something. So do something, and not everybody will see what you do. You know, I heard somebody say, well, such and such is not doing anything. And I said, well, do you know for sure? Maybe they're not putting it on social media, but that does not mean they're not doing anything. So do something. Some people believe in the peaceful protest. Some people believe in other types of protests. Some people believe in not going to a protest. I personally, my young people, my family and my circle and my son's friends, they wanted a protest. And I, because it has become something that is disturbing in terms of, you know, like the violence. That's not something that we allowed where we're at right now, because based on what we've seen in terms of the violence. We found out recently that the funeral, one of the services is going to be in North Carolina. I didn't realize he was from North Carolina, and that's Saturday. So we may go to that, but do something. And, you know, have the hope, but have the action behind.
And not everyone is going to be posting on their social media. People are processing all this differently.
Right.
You know what I mean? And being and putting in work differently. And so I always try not to assume and make those assumptions, because it doesn't help nobody. But we really don't know. We really don't know what people are doing. Some people are just trying to process and they can't even do anything else but that, you know, and that's fine too. This is not, it's not easy. So, but yeah, if you can do something, you know,
exactly. And process,
but don't feel bad. You know, if you can't, if all you can do right now is try to process what's going on.
Right. Cause that is something. Processing it is something. Yeah. If you don't process this, you know, and really think about what is happening and take, like you said, that time to yourself to understand, that can lead to some serious issues. You know, there are people that sometimes hold stuff in and explode.
Yes. You know? And we as OTs, we know all too well how mental health can play into all of this. And so you have to take care of yourself. So if you have to process it, process it. I think we're all processing it, to be honest. I am anyways, but processing and processing by, you know, showing support in different ways. And I think that has helped me with all of this, but yeah.
I agree. Is there anything else you would like to leave the audience with? Any last words of wisdom or quote that you'd like to say before we end?
I just, again, want to encourage people, especially people of color, that, and let them know that, you know, you wouldn't be where you're at without you doing, putting in the work. So you're doing something, you're moving forward, and keep that in mind anytime you feel like, you know, you're stuck, you're not good enough or anything like that. Cause, you are. And especially if that's something that you're passionate about and trying to achieve, whether it's, you know, going through an OT program, OTA program, or taking on a new leadership position or applying for something, like, just go for it. And don't doubt your abilities. And that's easier said than done, but just know that I believe in you. And if anyone ever needs anything or has any questions, I'm always available. And I, for some reason, a lot of OTs were just like that. We're available and willing to help. So reach out, whether it's to me or anyone else that you follow or look up to.
That is a great note to end on. Go for it. Don't doubt. And you know that you have at least two people that believe in you, because Alondra said that she does, and I do too. And I'm sure there's plenty more. So that's our show for today. Thank you so much, Alondra, for being a guest. I know you had another commitment, so I really, really appreciate, especially all the technical issues we had. But this is a great conversation. I hope we can continue it in other ways in the future.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thank you so much for having me on. And I really appreciate the work you're doing. I've been loving the podcast that have been coming out. And I'm like, ooh, Dr. Gibbs. Yes. Ooh, Dr. Covington. Yes. And I'm just like, Dr. You did Kalia too. And I'm just like, yes, Dr. Johnson. Yes. And so I'm loving your podcast because I don't think there's that many, if any, actually podcasts that specifically target people of color. I just don't think that there are any.
Yeah.
So you little trendsetter. Yes. Yes.
As well as you are. So we're going to keep on doing what we're doing. Just like you said, keep moving forward. So that's our show. Don't forget to subscribe. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.